Soul Sister Radio.
Radio and Doreen's Heart for the Community on Soul Sister Wednesday. Doreen, it's all yours.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Heart for the Community. And our show today is about managing stress. I'm so excited to have back on the show Dr. Sten. Hi, Dr. Sten.
Hello, Doreen. How are you doing?
I'm well. Thank you. You know, this show is is very personal to me because I, you know, as a former CEO, former executive director of nonprofits, you know, we have to juggle so many things, and there's not always someone that we can kind of share, you know, our concerns with. And so we take on a lot of this sort of burden and stress upon ourselves. And, you know, as I'm getting older, I'm realizing my body doesn't bounce back from it as quickly as it did before when I was in my 20s.
Right.
So today I really kind of want to chat with you about how we sort of manage stress you know, maybe define it, give people some strategies, and really kind of talk about some of the negative impacts it can have on our body, especially as we get older. So for all of our new listeners who don't know who you are, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me again on the show. Last time was great, and hopefully I can do the conversation of stress justice, because it's a big concern out in the community and society, especially in these days of all the uncertainties and everything else society is bringing our way. Myself, my background, I got involved with healthcare about 15, 17 years ago in the sports medicine area, and then studied and followed physical therapy, and then about 10 years ago got into chiropractic. And after practicing chiropractic and having a lot of fun and success with it, I really dived into clinical nutrition in the past 5 to 7 years to really be a comprehensive helping source for my patients that come in. So I do a lot more than low back pain and neck pain. We have patients that come in with diabetes, and yes, there's people that come in that want to help with stress management, so we can help out in those ways too.
Well, you know, and you mentioned diabetes and, you know, shoulder pains, because I notice with me that when I get really stressed out, I have tension that builds in my shoulders and in my neck, and then if I don't exercise or kind of release that, it leads to migraines, and I know that some people, they tend to overeat or undereat when they're stressed. You know, and can that lead to diabetes? So can stress actually lead to all these other illnesses?
Well, stress is actually one of the biggest influences as far as doctor visits in the United States. There's a great stat here that I saw that says up to 80% of all doctor's office visits are for stress-related ailments and complaints. And
wow.
Or complaints, I should say. So stress is, as the phrase says, stress is a monster. It is unnoticed potentially at first, but it has a building up, a creeping on effect to all of a sudden a person has high blood pressure, a person has diabetes or depression or anxiety, and it becomes a medical problem that they have to seek help for.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, and the key is to try and identify what the problem is. Is it the overeating that's causing the diabetes? Well, why is the person overeating? Well, because they're severely stressed out because they're going through a divorce or they're having some other life-changing effect that their body and their psychology just can't keep up with anymore.
Wow. I read statistic when I was doing research that they're averaging about $300 billion is spent, employers spend on people calling in sick because of some kind of stress-related ailment. So, it is, when you said it's a monster, it is a monster. It actually kind of consumes and takes over. But our body has a natural tendency, right, for stress when it's in short amounts, like short bursts, I guess, because that's what that fight or flight response is, isn't it?
Exactly, and I think a good thing, a good place to maybe start off with is just understanding what stress is. Because stress is coined as a negative player in our lives, when actually, as you said, Doreen, it could be very good, it's healthy, in small, and the operative word is controllable doses. So stress, yeah, is a normal physiological response to events in life that make you feel threatened or upset in some way. That's the fight or flight. You see a bear or you see a lion out in the wilderness, you're going to get the fight or flight because you're either going to run or you're going to fight for your life.
Mm-hmm.
The body can't distinguish between psychological stress and physical stress. Your body and the way it is perceived inside your central cortex is that it's just plain old stress. So the responses are going to be same. Increase in blood pressure, increase in cortisol levels, which is an important factor. On a small level of stress, cortisol is very healthy for our body. But over time, cortisol builds up, and that stress hormone that once was healthy becomes very unhealthy and can create, for example, high blood pressures or heart arrhythmias or even lead to the anxieties or other mental forms of stress?
Because the stress that we feel, like, you know, you talked about seeing a bear or something, but in a workplace setting, that kind of response can come from giving a presentation or, you know, planning a big event or something like that where, you know, your adrenaline is pumping and you're trying to, or even in sports, I would imagine.
It is. It's that pre-game jitters, as athletes will call it, or it's the sweaty palms that public speakers will get before they go out, or even nausea sometimes. And that, believe it or not, as much as we'll believe that's not a healthy response, that's your body's ability to, quote-unquote, keep you on your toes.
Mm-hmm.
But the trick is how to unwind from that, how to let go from that stressing experience to actually have your body not only physically but emotionally and mentally unwind. Because if you don't give your body the chance to unwind after that big presentation or stressing event, either positive or negative stressing event, your body is going to stay wound up to a certain extent. And that's when you get the layers of the cake building and building and building until you're just completely stressed out and you can't take life anymore.
You know, one of my sort of bad habits, especially when I was, you know, running a nonprofit, was I would always say things like, oh, well, I'll take care of that tomorrow. Like, there's so many things on my plate that need my attention right now. You know, let me handle this first. And I always made it, I mean, if you boil it down or drill down, it was basically an excuse of why I wouldn't go, you know, talk to someone or see someone about what I was going through. Because I always felt like, oh, you know, the work that I was doing at the nonprofit sort of took precedence over my own health. But what I found was, if I'm not healthy, and I had wonderful people that I work with who would remind me of this, they would say, if you're not healthy, then we're not healthy. Like, you have to be at 100% in order for you to lead the organization at 100%. So what advice would you give, you know, someone like me who definitely needed to release that tension and that stress but found excuses of why they couldn't fit it into their schedule?
Well, that's the one thing that is a great question, is how do we all begin accepting or taking our own control over our life and our health? And the first thing, like even last month when we talked about diet and cleansing and nutrition, mm-hmm. how do we realize we need to cleanse, for example, is the awareness. The same thing with stress. There has to be some kind of influence, maybe someone special to us who sits us down, or maybe unfortunately a life-changing traumatic event that quote-unquote slaps us upside the head and says, wake up, that makes us realize that we are stressed out and we need to do something about it. Because Doreen, I mean, in the corporate world especially, you know you're burning the candle at both ends, but you're so involved and entrenched with the business and the success that you're trying to pursue. How do you know that you're stressed out? It's hard to tell unless you have somebody or something happen to you that makes you realize, wow, I need to take a shift down. I need to take time to breathe, exercise, all these different strategies that are well known out there for stress management. They could be implemented, but first of all, there needs to be the awareness and the acceptance that, yes, I need to do something about this.
You know, it's very true because, you know, I think my body was telling me all along that I was overly stressed. You know, whether it was, you know, being tired or fatigued or catching a cold, and I would just push through it. I mean, I had walking pneumonia and I continued to push through because there was a big statewide conference I was planning. And, you know, it wasn't until, and actually I had a very good friend tell me, sit me down and say, if you don't stop, then your body's going to stop for you. And, you know, I was in my late 20s, early 30s, and I was like, oh, what are you talking about? That's silly. But, you know, 4 years, 5 years later, my body did stop me. And I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and I had no history of breast cancer in my family. You know, I was under the age of 40. I wasn't, you know, in that typical group. And my oncologist actually said, it's probably your lifestyle. And she would constantly tell me, you need to slow down. You need to cut back.
And that's the important thing, is listening to your body. It's one of my famous sort of great things of saying, your body can't speak English to you. You have to be able to sit still and listen every once in a while to tell what your body is telling you. That lady that came into your life can be potentially one of your great lifesavers.
Mm-hmm.
Awareness that was made. And a lot of people go into, I think, avoidance behaviors is what they're known as, to avoid stress like smoking or drinking too much, alcoholism. We already talked about the eating habits. A lot of people escape into food when they're stressed out. Even withdrawing from society or drugs, other mental and sociological attributes, or not attributes, but negatives that people avoid that stressor. When we actually have to be able to acknowledge the stressor and then do one of four things with it, which is either accept it, which is really difficult to do at times. You have to either adapt to it, alter, or avoid the stressor. So those four A's of dealing with stress, again, is either avoiding the stressor, altering the stressor, adapting, or accepting the stressor. If those four A's are done positively, they can actually be four great tools to identifying and dealing with stress.
Could you maybe give examples of the four A's and how that would pertain?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. So in the avoiding the unnecessary stress, when you're trying to avoid a situation, one thing is learning how to say no.
Mm.
That's a big thing for a lot of people, especially I like to please people and keep people happy. We're happy when we see other people smile. And that's great to have a giving, caring heart, but when it's putting you overboard and running yourself thin, people have to learn how to say no. When it comes to maybe altering the situation, maybe willing to compromise, talk about the situation and find ways to make things work instead of avoiding and not talking about things. So communicating is a big, big thing when it comes to altering the situation. When it comes to potentially adapting to the stressor, that is one thing that actually be really, really challenging, because it depends on what the stressor is, and that's where the identification can come in. But say, for example, if you're living in a situation, communicating in that situation, therefore you adapt to that situation because you've made the compromises to be able to do so. So there's a lot of great tools out there that can be implemented when you talk about either adapting, accepting, altering, or avoiding situations.
Now, is there a difference in gender? Like, will a woman implement those strategies differently than a man? Or is there a difference in how they just deal with stress in general?
I would say there's a difference. Guys are usually known as stereotypically the internalizers.
Mm.
They're the manly man, and so we don't need to communicate, or we don't need to ask other people for help. You know, if we're lost, God forbid, I pull over and ask for directions. So for one thing, it's that male ego, which is a psychological thing that society well knows in a comical fashion, but it's so true, is guys have a tough time for reaching out. Whereas women, they have better social skills and better social outreaching to be able to ask for help, but they get into more behavioral patterns of depression, of anxieties, and that's just because of, unfortunately, God-given hormones.
Mm-hmm.
With the testosterone and estrogen, the more estrogen we have, the more emotional things can actually get, especially in the physiological and hormonal responses to stress.
That's true, because, you know, I mean, even in myself, like, I tend to retreat, and that's when I know that I'm getting to that point where I'm not going to be able to manage my stress level very much. Like I actually need to just unplug, and, you know, plop myself in front of the television or go for a long drive. Probably neither one of those are very healthy for me.
And then, well, the going for a long drive is good because people use it for peace of mind, or going for a walk. And I mean, here's some other ways to relax and recharge, so to say, is walking or going for long drives, is spending time in nature, spending time with a friend. Some other ones, if you have pets, those are great joys. Working in a garden or hobbies or even athletics and working out. All these are great, great avenues that we can go and do or stay at home and do that can be stress relievers. Other medical approaches, which have been well researched, have gone into medication, or other people know it as deep breathing. So if you have a funny connotation or connection with meditating, you don't have to sit there and chant mantras or say aum for over and over. You can just sit there and breathe in, and it's great to sit comfortably, so you can sit in a chair or sit in the ground Indian style. And it's great to breathe with your stomach and not your chest, so it's diaphragmatic, so it's using your diaphragm or your belly to breathe and not your chest to breathe. And you just breathe in with a good cycle, starting with your belly. So rest your hands on your stomach, and your first inhale through your nose, you actually feel your stomach expanding because you're using your diaphragm. If you feel your chest lifting, you're doing it incorrectly. And then from there, once you breathe in, then you open your mouth and breathe out. And you do that in a cycle of maybe 10 repetitions, or maybe set a timer for a minute or two. And that's a great way to recharge, because it not only helps the stress response in your body, but helps reoxygenate the muscles and the tissues that are getting deoxygenated because they're so fired up from that stress response.
I have to butt in here real quick. It's Maria. Hi, Dr. Stin. How are you?
Good, Maria. How are you?
I'm listening to every word you guys are talking about, and I'm feeling like a complete idiot over here breathing, okay, with my stomach. However, I get what you're saying, but when I'm breathing through my stomach, obviously I haven't done it for a while, because it feels like when I'm breathing through my stomach, there's a whole bunch of, like, not bubbles, but like it's moving. What's that?
And that's where it's either gas in your stomach that is expanding, contracting, or it's that muscle and that diaphragm trying to, in a sense, wake up.
See,
because when your body gets so stressed, what's that, Maria?
I think it's more of the latter. Say that again.
Yeah, it's your body trying to wake up. It's that muscle trying to be activated again. When any muscle, whether it's your calf muscle or your diaphragm, your breathing muscle, doesn't get used properly, it either, quote-unquote, turns off neurologically or becomes weaker. And when we try and retrain that muscle is going to respond a little funny because it says, hey, I've been turned off for a while. I've gotten lazy. Now you're getting me to move? Well, it's going to talk back to you for a little bit. But after that, it's going to remember, and it's going to get turned on, and then your calf muscle or your diaphragm starts working in a proper fashion.
Okay, got it. Can we talk a little bit, because sometimes when we get overstressed, I know this happens to me sometimes, you know, we can run into having like a panic attack. What's the difference? Like how... I mean, there's so many things going through your head at the time, but what are some key things between the panic attack and, like, a heart attack?
And that's a tough differentiation because a lot of the symptoms can be the same. You have the decrease of breath, the shortness of breath. You can have sweats. You can have anxiety. You can have disorientation. You can even have limb or extremity pain. Usually heart attack, you're talking about left arm. All these different things play into the same effect of, oh my gosh, am I having an anxiety attack or am I having a heart attack? And that situation, the best thing to do is contact your doctor or healthcare professional and get their advice, because that one is a very tricky one to try. try and differentiate when you're just talking about symptoms or a way a patient presents.
Okay, got it. Now, if, you know, someone is, you know, maybe coming, recovering from a serious illness, maybe like a heart attack, or in my case, you know, like breast cancer or something, you know, is there, in addition to what you've already shared about kind of working through or getting yourself to relax, other strategies or step strategies on kind of removing or eliminating or minimizing stress that's in a healthy way?
Yeah, absolutely. Instead of the drinking and smoking and overly exercising ways. So we want to talk about healthy ways. That's a great idea. So one thing, again, is acknowledging or accepting. And there's two causes of stress. They could be external, internal. External can be work, life changes, relationship difficulties, financial problems, like that's not common today. Mm-hmm. And internal causes of stress can be inability to accept uncertainty, which is kind of like these days, negative self-talk or pessimism, being a perfectionist, so not being able to let yourself make mistakes, which is important. We're human. We're going to make mistakes. It's okay to make mistakes. And so acknowledging where the stress is coming from and implementing steps, say, for example, a support network. Friends and family is one of the most important things when it comes to life, not just dealing with stress, but when it comes to life, I think. Your sense of control, so knowing if you have confidence in a situation or if you have lack of confidence. So knowing your abilities is a big thing, knowing your attitude and outlook. There was a great quote from an author, Charles Swindoll. I mean, a lot of people have heard of him, but to paraphrase, it's life is really full of a lot of events. It's our attitude or our perception towards them that makes the biggest difference. Mm. So 10% is what life deals to us. 90% is how we react to it. And I remember that quote. My mom gave it to me years ago, and I still have that quote framed here in my office. And it's such a challenging perspective, but it's so true, is really it's how we react and not really what's happening to us.
Got it. Now, you know, that's then, I actually like that quote.
It's great. I'll get that to you, Doreen, when I see Marie. I'll get it to you, and it's a great one to keep up above your desk or at home somewhere. It's a reminder to just take life with a breath and realize that things are going to be okay. You might be in battle, but that's where the support groups, and that's where knowing your strengths and your weaknesses. So knowing yourself is very important. But I really think whether it's through, say, for example, when I'm doing nutritional or cleansing protocols or different things here in the office or getting low back pain better, I get my patient active with their friends, family, saying, get support to make sure you go through this okay. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing with stress. It's great to have friends and family to be able to confide in, to talk to. If you don't, get professional help. Everybody has gone through traumatic stresses in their life. Whether it's violent, whether it's car accident, or whether it's emotional from childhood, whatever it may be, we've gone through traumatic stressors, and that's where a professional can really help out. There's other ways to do that I've come in contact with. One company, and this is a great one to actually write down, to help deal with stress, is a company called Patriot Outreach, which is a big military outreach to all the troops that are coming home. And there's tons of research and news all over the stations or radios talking about post-traumatic stress with the troops that are coming home. Well, where did it come from? It came from stress. It came from battle trauma. That's a big example. A lot of us maybe sitting at home are thinking, hey, I haven't gone through war. But maybe you have. Maybe it's been a divorce. That's a war in its own way. Mm-hmm. Maybe you've gone through physical abuse. That's a definite battle in another way. Cancer, that's a definite battle in another way. And all those are stressors. And so this company has made a self-guided meditation, which is confidential. You do it in your home. And it's a self-guided timing of 30 minutes to 15 minutes. It all depends on how long you want to go into it. But it's, you don't have to sit down with somebody. You can do it on your own in your own privacy if that's really what you have to do. If you don't feel comfortable with talking to somebody or going to see somebody, this is a way you can actually do this at home or in your car, because it's a CD, and it's actually been proven all throughout the nation with military, but also with common people that are not in the service, so people like you and I, mm-hmm. with dealing from stress. And so the website, if I can give it out, is called patriotoutreach.org. And it's called Coping Strategies. It's a great program. I've given it to my patients, and I've also given it to some military members, because down here in Southern California, we're next to Camp Pendleton, which is one of the Marine bases here in the nation. It's a great program, and it's a great way to deal with, yes, either battle trauma for military people, but for people like you and I who've gone through traumatic stresses in our life as well.
You know, and that's a great resource, because, and I'm glad that you pointed out that, you know, a battle trauma does not actually mean that you were in a physical battle like war, but just the personal battles that we deal with as well. Because, yeah, cancer was a huge battle for me. And, you know, it was like a daily battle, and it continues mm-hmm. to be.
It is. That is. We have patients that come in here in our office for cancer, and they realize that this is not going to be a destination. It's a journey.
Mm-hmm.
And once you have cancer, unfortunately, like I was saying a little bit ago, that's one of the slaps in the face to say, wake up. That's your body saying, okay, I give up. Hopefully from that point, it's a lifestyle change. You, in a way, danced with the Grim Reaper, and
mm-hmm.
which is fantastic. I mean, you're a warrior, but it was stressful at the same time. So making sure we heal from those stresses are really important.
You know, it taught me a lot of important life lessons, and it's unfortunate, and it's why I like to talk about my cancer story, so that hopefully, you know, other people don't have to walk that same path to learn lessons like this. But, you know, really, your body does tell you when it needs nutrition or when it needs to rest or when, you know, you're pushing it too hard. But we don't always listen to what it's telling us. And, you know, it changed the way I worked. It changed the way I ate. You know, I'm much more aware and conscious of the food that I, you know, take in. I still have my moments of, you know, chocolate cake and cupcakes and things like that, but, you know, trying to be more healthy, organic, not so much artificial and chemical type of things. But, you know, I think that my inability to deal with stress was probably a cause for a lot of the things. I know it was the cause for my catching walking pneumonia twice. I know it was the cause of, or part of the cause for my cancer. So, you know, what you're sharing today is so important, and I hope that our listeners are really finding the benefit from it, because we don't realize it, but stress can really do a number on us health-wise.
It says stress is a killer. Everybody, whether you're an acupuncturist, massage therapist, chiropractor, medical doctor, or neurosurgeon, will agree with that comment. Stress is a killer.
Mm-hmm.
I have people that come in here with neck pain and low back pain, not because they fell, but because they have so much stress in their life. So stress can be affected and cause your body to get into such a negative spin that, like we talked in the beginning, I mean, heart disease, digestive problems, sleep problems, depression, obesity, even autoimmune diseases, when your immune system starts attacking itself.
Mm-hmm.
Skin conditions, rashes like eczema and psoriasis are big, 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 what we call psychosomatic diseases. So it's your psychology causing a body or somatic response. a lot of that is psychologically driven from your fight or flight, your parasympathetic system being overrun. And over time, your body can't keep up with it and breaks down. Heart disease, skin rashes, digestive problems. I mean, you talk to people who have ulcers, talk to them about their job or family life, and guarantee they'll probably be a stressor. Like the people who have constant bouts of ulcerative colitis or these different digestive problems where they get constipated and get mixed up with diarrhea. I know it's a pleasant conversation, but these are all signs and symptoms of your body saying, hey, listen to me, migraines, headaches are huge, blood pressure, heart arrhythmias. Then you go down one road, which is very, very effective, and you get medications or pharmaceuticals from that aspect. But really, you're taking care of the symptom. You're not really taking care of the cause. And so if you're having stress at work, what is an anti-anxiety pill going to do for me? It's going to make me feel better, which is very important, but it's not going to take care of the cause of the problem.
Right.
And the biggest thing is really trying to find out, and I think in every doctor, whether you're a medical doctor or alternative doctor, our biggest charge in society, our biggest outreach to society is to find out the cause of the problem. Of course, we want to get you, the patient, feeling better. That's why you're coming in. But we have to figure out the cause of the problem and not just how to mask it, but how to get it better through natural healing.
And is there, I know that we talked about, you know, nutrition and that last time, and you said that, you know, it took some time to get to the point of eating poorly and having all these health problems related to that. So it's going to take time to, you know, get rid of some of those or minimize some of those. Is that the same with stress? Is there a way to get eliminated, and how much time do you think that normally takes, depending on the person?
And that is, you said it exactly with that last couple words, is depending on the person.
Okay.
I wish there was a way to say you can expect, especially with stress and anxiety and psychologically driven health concerns, that's different. When we're talking about body pains, then a lot of doctors can give their prognosis. Yeah, your ankle sprain should be better in 2 to 4 weeks. When it comes to stress responses, everybody, either a positive stress response or a negative stress response, you know, some people can shuck things off like they're a duck and water just flows right off of their back. And you got another person that just crumbles under just the initial pressure of going out in the day.
Mm-hmm.
So you got different people who can tolerate or have different tolerances to stress. And that's going to be the same as far as healing and the time it takes. I mean, it all depends on how much action the person wants to take. If they're going to take it slow and step by step, it's going to take longer. If they want to just completely cold turkey, get out of the situation and make things better for their life, then that's going to be a different outcome as well. So when it comes to the psychological outcomes, that's a little more difficult to put a time frame on and how long it's going to take before we start feeling better.
Because, I mean, I guess you're right, because it does depend on the person, because it almost is a rethinking for them, changing the way they think or changing the way they react based on the quote that you shared with us. Because if our, you know, initial response is to, you know, kind of panic, then that stress level and that fight or flight is going to kick in immediately, and then it's going to, you know, make that person anxious. But if you're able to kind of take a step back and kind of breathe and assess the situation before jumping in, you know, that's a huge mind shift, I think, for people. At least it was for me.
And it really is. And that's the most difficult thing, is changing or starting a change. A lot of us are afraid of change, or we're too stubborn about change, or whatever it may be. Change is the hardest thing to do. But when there's a positive outcome, like that nice carrot hanging in front of the horse is going to keep on walking. And so that's where that nice carrot for us can be friends and family, can be those support groups or those other systems of self-awareness like I talked about, or your positive attitude, like that Swindoll 90%, 10%,
mm-hmm.
or the ability to deal with your emotions or knowledge or preparations of situations. All these tools can be implemented to help people start from ground zero, either depression, anxiety, we'll just say the person that's really, really emotionally tapped out and stressed out, to be getting better, slowly implementing these tools and strategies to be able to say, okay, I realize it's going to take time, but let's start making a change.
Right. Now, in jobs that are more stressful, like I kept thinking about those sort of adrenaline junkie type jobs, you know, race car drivers, firefighters, police officers, you know, where, you know, they have, I would think, a higher tolerance or a higher level of stress, is it just how they manage it?
I would say a combination of both. There's definitely people that are just designed to deal with stress better, but also they can have other ways of de-stressing after the event. That, of course, it has to be positive. You know, you win NASCAR and it's a great celebration, really stressful. You go out and drink champagne all night. That's not a positive way of de-stressing. We have to be happy. We have to celebrate, because that's a big thing of the de-stressing moment, is that if there's a big speech and you nailed it, a big corporate event, and you planned it well and things went off well, yes, you got to like reward yourself, but in a positive way. Go out, have fun. But if you go out and overly imbibe and everything, everybody's going to have their opinion about that. But it's what you do after that event for the next 2 days, the next week, is going to be really important, because our psychology has a really strong way of holding on to things for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so just because we had our big speech or big traumatic event on Monday doesn't mean by Tuesday, Wednesday we're better just because it's over.
Right.
Your subconscious, your consciousness might be able to block it out or avoid it, but your subconscious is the part that doesn't forget. It keeps on spinning and spinning on it, and that's where long-term down the road, anxiety, depression, other psychological manifestations come around.
Okay. You know, the other thing that I found interesting that I didn't know about, and perhaps I should have, but I didn't realize that, you know, like when you're already in a stressful state and you drink alcohol or take some kind of narcotic or something, it actually doesn't help relax the body. It causes more stress. How does that work or happen?
It does. I mean, we think of, and it just kind of comes to a conversation with a patient yesterday, is that he has to have some drinks to be able to go to sleep because it quote-unquote relaxes him. The effect that we know through alcohol is a depressant, so it's going to, for most of us, relax us or take quote-unquote the edge off.
Mm-hmm.
But inside the body, it's actually causing more stress. For one thing, alcohol breaks down to sugar. Your body doesn't like sugar, plain and simple. And so your body has to work harder from that point, not only your liver, but also blood sugar control, pancreas, diabetes. And then from there, it's a toxic effect on the body as well. Research has come out to say, okay, a beer a day or a small glass of wine or ounce of hard alcohol is good for the cardiovascular system because it decreases blood pressure by decreasing the blood's thickness or viscosity. But on the other side of it, if it goes to too much, again, having a couple drinks or two big glasses of wine, or some people go along with their daily medication when they get home of having a drink or two, it has an additive effect. Monday becomes Tuesday, becomes Friday, becomes the next week upon week. Your body, again, just like with physiological stress, is not going to like the constant psychological stress. Is not going to like the physiological stress over time either.
Mm-hmm.
And so you decrease, say for example, alcohol is also diuretic. so you get dehydrated. And if you're not replenishing the water, that can actually lead to dehydration down the road. A month ago, we talked about how important water is to the body. When you're taking it out, if you're stressed out enough, we talked about anxiety, depression, then you add on the dehydration from there, that's going to exponentially affect the psychological things.
Right. You know, and I still use the formula you gave last month on how much water I should be drinking. So for any new listeners, do you want to share that?
All right, that's great. I'm just having some water right now. It's just, we try and do half our body weight in fluid ounces. That's the goal. 8 ounces, or I should say 8 glasses a day of what was used 30 years ago. That's not accurate. So nice job, Doreen. You're doing yourself a great, great deal of health with that one there. Nice work.
Thank you. And I've been telling, you know, I told my parents, I told my roommate, I'm like, do you know that you should be drinking more than 8 ounces or 8 glasses of water?
And this mother looked at you like, really?
I know.
What are you talking about? And that's where it's great that, you know, have this source of information being radio and your group of ladies and other people that are supporting. You guys are really opening doors for people to hear information that if they know, it's great because it's just solidifying other beliefs and ideas, or maybe it's opening their mind to other potentials and healthy ways to deal with stress or eat properly or rehydrate or keep hydrated. There's information needs to get out there. It's out there, but there's a lot of other information out there as well. Every commercial spot has information. So you really got to try and outweigh the negative information with the positive information.
That's so true. And I think one of the things I learned from the topic last month, and it applies to this month as well, is, you know, things in moderation are okay. It's just when we kind of go to one extreme or the other. So even with the stress, you know, in small, you know, doses or in small moderations, it's okay because it's what our body, you know, is sort of was sort of meant to do. But it's when we go to the extreme is when we start to, you know, get into that danger zone.
And that's exactly it. That's the best way to really summarize stress, is that it's a healthy response. The stress response is healthy. It is what was given to us to be able to deal with either fight or flight mechanisms when we are hunting and gathering, to dealing with Southern California traffic on the highways. It's important that we have this mechanism, but it's also important how we unwind the fight or flight, is how we relax. And it has to be done in a healthy way. Again, I can't emphasize that enough. The exercising is great. Other ways of doing the healthy lifestyle approaches is exercise, the diet you talked about, which is very, very important. Eating those fast foods and those high inflammatory agents are not going to help your body's ability to handle stress. Reduce your caffeine and sugar. Stress already amps you up. What's caffeine doing it? And sugar doing it even more. So it's going to deplete your immune system. It's going to actually raise your cortisol levels even more. So when you're tired and you're like, I got to get this paper done and everything else, and day by day you have cup after coffee, or now there's the 5-hour energies, now there's the Red Bulls and everything else. There's a reason why those are so popular. Because society is burning the candle at both ends, especially these days, because things are not exactly the easiest as they've been in the past 100 years. I actually talked to another partner down in San Diego, and she's been a naturopath for 20 years, and she was saying that she has never seen a time in her career where she has seen so many cases of bad health because of stress the past year. It's just amazing how the times have really changed to really become efficient, or not efficient, but showing stress's effects on our society. She's been a practice for 20 years, and she says the past year is by no doubt she's had the most cases of stress-related health problems. And I've had during the summertime, so many people coming in with flus, colds, pneumonias, et cetera, when it should be a healthy time.
Mm-hmm.
So the stresses of today's society has definitely taken our effects. And the more things we can do, like these healthy living points, is really important. The last thing, which is really important to talk about, is sleep. We got to make sure we're getting enough sleep. It's not only for tissue repair, say from exercise or day-by-day use, but it helps the body unwind. It helps the body refuel.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing is sleep. And some people will say, I can't go to sleep because I'm so stressed out, or I can't stay asleep. I go to sleep and I wake up every hour. These are all signs of you being stressed out. When you're not sleeping, you got to find help. Again, the Ambiens and those sleeping aids, they've grown in sales exponentially because stress is so big in society. But again, you're dealing with the symptom. You're not dealing with the cause.
Right.
Those just work, but they're not really getting to the core problem.
I have a question real quick. This is Maria again. And Dr.
Yeah.
Sam talked about it. And I've heard you a couple times say, if you have this, then go see this. Or if you have this, then be tested for this. The problem is when you don't have health insurance and you don't have those facilities or those tests or those doctors at your disposal, such as we're seeing in countries all over the world that are now broke and they can't sustain their countries anymore with their social medicines. So they can't just go to the store and get an Ambien, and they can't go to the doctors and get checked out. So in that case, especially for women out there that don't have health insurance like me, because when you leave all of the crap, you leave all the good too, okay? So what do we do when we have nothing else but what God has given us? What do we do?
Well, that's where really all healthcare has come from, natural sources. Healthcare has been mandatory ever since humans have walked the earth. Ever since, you know, God put us down here, there's always been owies and ailments. Nature has found ways and does have ways to deal with stress. It doesn't have to be pharmaceutically enhanced or helped out. Again, time and place for everything. But that's where the other effects of, and I know some different responses, I could already read the radio waves right now, but is trying to take more time for breathing and meditation, is trying to find more support group people, more girlfriends, or me more guy friends, or vice versa, because I know I have some great girlfriends that I could sit down and talk with. Finding a support group to help us through. So it's really implementing these strategies that we talked about, and even more importantly, when you don't have the ability for paying for health care, is you got to try and find a way on your own.
Mm-hmm.
And those ways are the breathings, the meditations, the realizing that we do have to take a gear shift down, we have to take a step slower in life and make time to do these things. And so I have patients set reminders on their phone to take breaks every hour, every half an hour, whatever it is, to get up and walk or to deep breathe when they're at work.
Mm-hmm.
So there's different strategies that can be given that don't cost a dime to actually implement into life. Now, when stress has gotten so high, then the time and place, professional help might be needed. But if you work at it diligently enough and have a support group that can actually support you, a lot of great things can happen without having to pay for help.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Sten. Why don't you go ahead and give our listeners your contact information if they'd like to come in and, you know, set up an appointment with you or, you know, chat with you on Facebook or something.
Absolutely. I have a website. It's www.drsten.com, and it's all spelled out. So it's D-O-C-T-O-R-S-T-E-N.com. The office number is 949-273-6240. Those are easy ways to either shoot me an email from the website or contact the office, and I'll be glad to talk with anybody over the phone. I never charge for phone consultations or anything like that. So go ahead and call up and bend my ear, and I'll do the best I can to help. If I can't help, I will definitely find a way to help.
Great. And I hope that, you know, we can continue to have you on our show maybe monthly. I really like kind of this, you know, Ask Dr. Sten type of sessions.
Well, that'd be great, because just like I said, it's one of my jobs of being out here in the community as a doctor is to educate. Whether I'm a chiropractor or an MD, it doesn't matter. The education is still the same, and we have to go out there and educate people on what are great ways to okay naturally at times, and other times pharmaceutically or surgery. There's times and place for everything, but we have to go out and educate. And so if there's a way to do it through this radio show, I'm all game for it, because I'd love to go out and try and help more people.
Awesome. So thank you again, Dr. Sten, for being on this show. For any of our listeners, we will post the link to the archive shortly after today's broadcast, so that if you want to go back and listen to what Dr. Sten shared, or if you'd like to talk to him, you know, you can go to the Heart4 Facebook page or website, and we can help connect you if you didn't get a chance to write down his information. So thank you again, everyone, for tuning in for Heart for the Community. And remember, together we can change the world one heart at a time. Have a great week. We'll see you next time. Bye.